These are the songs of our lives. Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Songs of Our Lives. I'm Brad Rose. I am an artist, a composer, a writer, the founder of Foxy Digitalis, and someone who thinks about music and sound far more than is healthy. Each week, I invite on a guest to talk about the songs, the music that has meant a lot to them and left its mark. Previous guests include Sarah DeVacci, White Boy Scream, Dorian Wood. The list goes on and on, but this week I am so excited to have Sean McCann. Sean and I go way back. It's getting close to 20 years now. I would guess 2007, 2008. Didn't even realize until the conversation we had at the front of this episode that a tape I put out of his in 2008 on Digitalis called Flutter Oasis was his first release on, like, not a self-release. So that's pretty awesome. He was also part of the Ajalaska Skull Bundle that we did a couple years later. Anyway... Sean rules. I was really excited he wanted to do this, and the timing's good because he has an incredible new album out called The Leopard. It's on Recital, his label, which is, again, one of the best labels there is. Nobody's doing it. Yeah, just one of the, some of the most interesting music and sound and just everything, really. But anyway, The Leopard, it's his first opera, which is really cool. It's fascinating. It was kind of unexpected when I first heard it, and I find myself revisiting it a lot, just sometimes in totality, other times in sections. There's just, the language is really great. The sound design is really great. There's just something really captivating about it. And, I don't know. Sean's great. And that's, really, that's about the most I can say. I mean, I can say a lot more, but you know, so I highly recommend everybody checking it out. This conversation was a lot of fun, and I hope you all enjoy it. My guest today is a musician, a composer, a sound engineer, a curator, the founder of Recital. Many more things, I'm sure. It's Sean McCann. Welcome to the show. So, hey, you've got a record coming out on Halloween called The Leopard. It's your first record in 6 years. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. I guess hearing you call it a record, I guess it is a record, but it doesn't feels kind of... I don't know, adjacent to a record, but
that's fair.
Yeah, because I feel like a lot of people, I mean, some people would hear it and be like, this is not music. But yeah, anyways, it is the first release, like solo release, that I've done in quite some time. And a lot of circling the drain with this kind of like, should I release it? Should I not release it? Kind of energy. But I'm glad that I finally finished it.
So for people who don't know, so it's an opera. I mean, like you wrote.
Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of like framing it that way. It's kind of an opera in the sense of like Robert Ashley operas. Not immediately name drop Robert Ashley, but I guess that maybe more technically it's a radio play because there's not like constant singing throughout, and sound design is kind of like a really key thing. And it's kind of, you know, it could be staged, and I'm hopefully going to set up some sort of staging of some of the scenes from it around LA, maybe early next year or something. But it is primarily meant to just be listened to like on playback. So radio play, I guess. But yeah.
What drew you to that structure? I mean, like, where
Yeah. Sorry, I totally cut you off. Go ahead.
No. That's basically my question. Six.
What drew me to that structure? I guess I was getting like very, I don't consider myself like a good musician or a good composer, or, you know, I think I can accidentally make some interesting stuff sometimes. And I was really kind of losing energy. But I think like introducing text and like sound design really made me excited about like sound again. Cause it was something that I had never really done. And something I also like hadn't really heard a lot of. And I guess, yeah, I think exploring something that made me a little uncomfortable, you know, I guess I'm drawn to that because there's some sort of safety blanket in making like drone music or like boring ambient music like I have made in the past. And, you know, some of it's okay, you know, but I guess I wanted to go a little bit deeper with it. And it's really fun. Like editing it is like, I love editing sound. I mean, that's what I do for like my job is I do like sound design and dialogue editing for film. And I don't know. It was just I started working on it. I mean, I started like coming up with the desire to do it in like 2017. So a long time ago. And then finally kind of like when COVID happened and I was sitting on my couch like all day, I hired a bunch of voice actors and finally like got it going. And then, you know, and then kind of finished it in 2020 and then just kind of sat on it. And
oh, wow.
For like, you know, years basically of like, yeah, I'm going to finish it. I'm going to finish it. And then I got into like the psycho, like frame fucking of like, let me remove this word and pitch down this syllable and like ridiculous stuff that is totally unnecessary. But that's the kind of stuff that I really enjoy for better or worse. So yeah, I'm just amazed that I actually finished it. And, you know, it is a bit, I do feel a bit vulnerable releasing something like that because it does have text and it's kind of, you know, it's different, you know, and there's not a lot to like hide behind and putting yourself out there like that, you know, so, but it's okay. I'm finding out that it's okay to be a bit uncomfortable.
Yeah. So. That was, kind of has been sort of my mantra this year, and including like, I mean, I went back to therapy and stuff, but it's like uncomfortable is okay. Uncomfortable is okay.
Yeah, even though your brain is screaming at you that it's not okay, but
yeah,
you know, learning to sit with it is you know important.
I do like I keep so I don't know. I guess you sent me this as like a month ago, 2 months ago. I don't know. I have no track. I've lost all track of time. Yeah. But I've listened to it a number of times, and I keep just coming back to the image of like these characters on a boat cooking and eating themselves.
Yeah.
Like, which, you know, I was even thinking like listening to your description of the editing, you getting into like this meticulous editing in some ways feels like this sort of kind of act of self-consumption, but
yeah. Sure.
Where did this image come from, or this, I, you know, like what made you think like, yes,
I don't know. I mean, it's a good question. Like I wrote most of it while I was like very drunk on this cruise ship with my sister. And I went on a Star Trek themed cruise with my sister.
Holy shit.
Twice.
Wow. oh man.
I grew up very into like Deep Space Nine and Next Generation. Yeah. And anyways, it was amazing trip. Like my sister and I get along really well and it was really special to do that.
Yeah.
But I was definitely drinking a lot at the time, and I am now sober and I quit drinking, but I definitely like would go to the extremes of like, you know, taking one thought and just like running with it. And I don't know, I guess some of my subconscious was coming out in terms of the self-consumption and deterioration and Sisyphic. Is that a word? Sisyphic?
I don't know. It should be. I don't know. It works. I think everybody knows what you mean. And God, it's hard to say.
Sisyphus. But yeah, so I guess I don't know. So I guess some of myself came out in that. But also just the plot is very secondary, honestly. There is no real plot. Like it's more just an excuse to have kind of voice and words and
yeah,
like an atmosphere. And I feel like that might kind of push it even further in away from people liking it, because not only is there no music, but there's also no real plot too, you know? So but to me, it's all about that kind of feeling and the environment and the atmosphere. And that's what I really focused on and doing the kind of incidental music that's behind too, because there is like strings and piano and this woman singing throughout a lot of the background of it. And there's a lot of kind of heavy sound design throughout it that becomes quite musical. So yeah, it's more just like an impression, you know, of a story rather than something you actually need to like latch on to. So
yeah. Sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. And there is like one of the piece, the music part that sticks with me in this is maybe because it's at the end, but there is that like end piece that's like the violins and choir. Oh
yeah, the coda thing at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was fun to do. Yeah. So I tried to have like two kind of more musical pieces, and then there's these like, kind of intermission type copy pieces, which kind of reconstitute like old like 78s with sound design and, you know, just kind of like as this image of this character in like a greenhouse playing back these weird records and freaking out. And yeah, so that was fun. It was just the whole thing was basically, I mean, the fact that I was like almost not going to release it just shows how much like I was just, I guess, like having fun doing it myself, you know? And yeah. I mean, Sarah had to hear me, you know, complain and groan about making it for 5 years. So I definitely, I did actually dedicate the opera to her. But yeah.
So. Well, yeah, I mean, I really like it. It's, I was totally unexpected. Like I've been, you know, I've listened to your work for a long time. Hell, I mean, I think, didn't I put out a tape of yours at some point?
You put out, I think actually my first tape that somebody else did. Yeah.
Oh man, that's wild.
In 2008, 2007, I think.
Holy shit. Yeah. God. Wow. And I bet I have a copy of it somewhere.
Yeah. Thank you for doing that, by the way.
Yeah. But, yeah. Hey, happy to help. But yeah, I was just, it's the most unexpected thing I've heard this year. And that, and I've said this many times on here, when I hear things that sort of confuse me, I get really excited. And like I said, this was super unexpected. I think the first listen, I was just like, what the fuck is going on? And which just made me want to, I was like, okay, I want to know everything about this. I want to, you know, yeah. So, but I also don't like, I don't want to, cause it feels like there's elements to it where it's like, I don't want to know all the, like how the sausage was made, if you will.
Right. Yeah. I'm with you. I like that mystery. So I guess I'll stop talking about it.
Yeah. Oh yeah. There we go. So, but, and that's cool that you're going to try to do some of the scenes or whatever, like do
yeah,
some live.
It'd be really fun. I do want to, I mean, I would love to stage some of it. So that's the plan, is, I don't know, in the coming months to try to do something in LA of like, you know, two or three of the scenes or something like that. So.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Well, everybody should check it out. I don't have a good segue now. But it's, yeah, you won't, I don't know. People aren't going to, I don't know how people are going to react to it. I'm sure that's your whole, it's like, who the hell knows? But
yeah, well, I mean, I've kind of lost all expectations with releasing music over the over many years. So here we are, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, same. I've just gotten to the point where I'm like, oh, I'm just gonna make stuff that I like and think is cool. And
yeah, I mean, I've shared the record, like early on I shared the record with some friends and with Sarah, obviously, and I got some really nice like messages back that like really made me feel like, oh wow, like I'm glad that I decided to release this. And that that's like enough for me to feel like, okay, but I don't really know what to expect beyond that. And I don't, even if it was like the perfect bad ambient record, what would you expect from that by the same token? You know, like, I don't know what successful record means.
I don't either
anymore.
I have this conversation all the time and none of us have, nobody has a clue.
Yeah, and I guess it doesn't matter. But I guess the last thing I'll say about the thing is that there's like a book that comes with it that to me was like just as fun as making the libretto and doing the editing, was actually putting the book together as well, which has like a lot of weird elements into it. So that, if you, but it's available as a double CD with like a hardbound book that turned out really nicely. It's also like a triple LP that comes with a softbound book. And then digitally you get like the PDF of the libretto with it as well. So, cause I just wanted to have the text be with it as kind of, cause they kind of speak to each other. Some imagery in there as well. So.
Man. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're just going to switch it up now.
Let's do it. Yeah.
And as always, as ever, I'm going to start with, what is the first song that you remember?
The first song that I remember is a song called Angel Baby by Rosie and the Originals. And I just remember this, like my dad would play this all the time growing up. It sounds kind of like Phil Spector-ish, but it's not. It's like this girl, I think she was like 15 when she recorded the song, and she's like from San Diego, and it's just like, it's just a really pretty song. But yeah, like it's in all the home videos of me as a kid playing in the background while I'm like outside playing in the grass and stuff. So it's it's a really, I like re-listened to it obviously when you asked me about this, and I was like, oh man, this is a really nice song. So
I hadn't heard it in a while. And then I kept thinking, I'm confusing it with something else, because I kept thinking, like, isn't this in Back to the Future or something? But it's not.
Yeah, it has like that and like Scorsese like vibe. You know, it's got cinematic. I'm sure it's in some movies, you know.
I'm sure it is, yeah. I also like kind of how, like, thinking, you know, it is Spectre-ish, but it feels kind of unpolished in a really wonderful way.
Yeah, there's like one part where the drummer like screws up or something. Yeah. I listened to it like many times and I was like, is that like, is he like a genius like screwing up on purpose, or did he just blow it? But yeah, I love her voice, and just the vibe is really nice of that track. So
what is a song that either makes you cry or it makes you feel, if it doesn't actually make you cry, it just makes you feel that kind of way?
Well, the only answer that feels right would be to say some like Albert Eiler piece. This piece, Our Prayer, which his brother wrote, that followed by Spirits Rejoice. There's this live record that Hat Hut Records put out of this 1966 performance in France that is like my favorite live record of Albert Eiler's, and this performance just kills me, but it's basically all Albert Eiler stuff. But I remember the first time I heard Eiler, I was like, I had like a, it's so cheesy to say, but I had like a spiritual experience. Like it was like this dopamine rush that I still get every time I listen to that, specifically that era of like the quintet stuff with the violin, with Michelle Sampson playing violin. I'm even right now, like I just like, I feel it, you know. It's, I don't know. There's something about it that is like, it hit me so hard, like at the right time, and it has just never left, you know? So.
Yeah. Yeah. I always, you know, I feel like the word transcendent is overused. I'm talking about music a lot of time, but like this truly is.
It is. Yeah.
It just, yeah, I don't know. And this, yeah, that live record you're talking about, it's, God, I've listened to it so many times. That whole performance is just,
yeah, it's insane. Have you seen the documentary, My Name is Albert Eiler?
Yeah. It's been a minute, but yes. Yeah.
Yeah. That's there's that live footage of them playing.
Yeah.
I think it's on the same tour and it just kills me. Yeah, it's insane. So I was lucky enough to like kind of cold call Michelle Sampson, the violin player. And I did a record on recital of him and his wife playing. She was playing this like harpsichord type instrument and he was playing violin. And that's like, it was such a dream come true to put that out and like communicate with him.
Dang. I don't even know. When was that? I feel like
God, I don't remember. Probably 2018 or something.
Okay. Yeah,
but it's called the Claviorganum and the Violin, and yeah, it's like them playing these kind of Baroque Italian pieces. But you can still hear that same playing, that kind of like fiddle-esque kind of like just he's got it, you know. Dang.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. I'm gonna have to look that up because I don't.
Yeah, for sure.
Remember that. All right. On the flip side of that, what is the song that will put you in a better mood?
Well, I was going to say a Franco Battiato song and I changed my mind and I said the Rain song by Led Zeppelin. And I love that. I'm not like a Led Zeppelin fan, you know, really, but I like certain songs by them like a lot and kind of obsess over them. But yeah, the Rain song I really love. And you know, the guitar playing, the little acoustic guitar stuff is just so beautiful. I actually like learned I'm not good at guitar, but I learned like a fragment of that intro, like 15 seconds of it. And there's some, I collaborate sometimes with Matthew Sullivan and Alex Toomey, my old friends. And we had recorded like, I can't even remember, 3 years ago, like an album of, and one of the tracks on it is me like mumbling my way through this like 15 second segment of Rain Song for 25 minutes basically. But it's really fun. Like at some point I'm sure we'll try to release the
album.
That guitar stuff is so beautiful.
Yeah. I've never been a real big Zeppelin fan. I think but part of it is I don't know. Robert Plant's voice doesn't do it for most of the time. But it's a little bit subdued here for one. And the guitar on here is just, those like sort of cascading shimmering chord progressions. It's so good. Someday in the future, I look forward to hearing the 25 minute.
Yeah, I think it's me toggling between that and then playing a Genesis, like a fragment of a Genesis song called Horizons, but horribly again. And then it's like Matt and Alex playing, I think, cello and piano in the background. It's really weird. It's
That sounds like fun. Okay, well, everybody's favorite question. What is objectively the greatest song of all time?
Oh god, yeah, this is really tough. And I did say a Grateful Dead song. I am a Deadhead, but like I'm kind of picky with my Deadheadism-ness. But so I picked Box of Rain, which I think is just like, I don't know, there's something about it. I just put it on and it's immediately like the lyrics, the singing, Phil Lesh's singing, and then like Jerry's harmonies and just everything about it is just, I love it.
Yeah, it's kind of a perfect song.
Are you a Deadhead? Do you like the Dead? Or
I don't know that I'd call myself a Deadhead, but I do like the Dead. I don't know what the difference is. Like, I don't. It feels so daunting to me to like go down that rabbit hole.
Yeah.
I know the stuff that most people know, and I. Like it took me a while because when I was like growing up, punk was very formative for me. And you know, you hated the fucking Grateful Dead when you were in a hardcore show,
right?
And so I had to get over that, which took me a little while. But Box of Rain, I think Box of Rain was one of the first things that really made me realize, like, okay, everything I thought about this is wrong.
Yeah, for me it was like. I agree with you. And it wasn't until a bit later that I got like really into the live shows. And I guess like for me, that's what made me really like the band, was like getting really, I would like work from home. I was like working a different job at the time, and I would just listen to like their like live shows like all day. Specifically like late 60s, early 70s stuff. And it's just, you know, it's something you can, I have like a very obsessive personality, and I think it's good for people who have obsessive personality.
I have a very, I've often thought, because I have a very obsessive personality too, as anybody could probably tell if you look at, and yeah, it's always been one of those things. I'm like, I don't know that I have the mental capacity or the time to, because it's like, I know once I go in, it's going to be bananas.
Yeah, it's definitely consuming. But there's also a lot of, like, to me, there's a lot of, like, dead stuff that I'm like, oh, God, like, not this song. You know, like probably, like a third of the songs, I'm like, ugh. But then there's this, you know, it's one by one, you get hooked. And then you like the songs that you used to hate. It's weird.
Well, I've ostensibly got half my life left, hopefully. And so somewhere I know it's one of those things where I know it's gonna happen. Like, it's inevitable in a way.
Yeah. But
maybe at that point I'll be reaching out and be like, all right, I need
I got hooked on like the slow ballads, like To Lay Me Down, and like there's a lot of like slower, sad Jerry songs that I just love. So
That sounds up my alley.
Okay,
well, on the other side, like, what is a song you used to love?
Well, this now? Is... Yeah. Oh, sorry. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, now... Well, now it's not so much. It doesn't do...
It kind of plays into the dead a little bit. So, I used... The first, like, obsession of mine was Sublime. Growing up in Southern California.
Oh, right.
When I was in second grade, my neighbor across the street gave me the album 40 Ounce to Freedom on CD by Sublime, or like Let Me Borrow It or something. And I was like, oh my God, this is so cool. I was like obsessed with it. I mean, this, to answer your question, like, I actually still like Sublime a lot. And it's, so this, I couldn't really answer your question of like, what doesn't do it for me anymore. I don't know. Right. Just like, I don't know, but
it hits different.
It hits different. Yeah. I think that's true. But like, I was like so obsessed with Sublime, and like that Sublime actually turned me on to like the Minutemen and all the SST stuff, and like, and the Grateful Dead, because they covered Scarlet Begonias.
Oh man.
Well, I know, like, they were like a gateway to a lot of cool stuff. And then at some point I was like, okay, this is, I'm drifting away from, you know, telling people I like Sublime. So. Yeah.
I totally relate to that. Not with Sublime, but for me, that band was Rancid, and decided to really fully investigate that with my friend Sam for 2 years. We did a weekly podcast
about Rancid. Yeah, I remember hearing about that. Yeah,
yeah, and now I can't listen to Rancid like that. It's like I'm good. Talking about those guys every day, every week for a couple of years, you're like, okay, fuck these.
It's, they're really, Sublime, super important to me, but no, it doesn't necessarily hold up. I actually used to sell Sublime bootlegs on eBay when I was in seventh grade. Nice. Just burn CDRs with no art, and I would actually like make like, you know, $40, and like it was like
amazing. It was a
little racket that I had early on, but
that's when you knew you wanted to. It's like, oh, this is like running a record label.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, ripping people off on eBay.
Record labels aren't as profitable as
that. Yeah.
Okay. Well, what's a song that, I don't know, some people hate, some group of people hate it, some person hates it. I don't know. Some people hate it. You don't care. You love it.
I chose this Joseph Boy's Namjoon Paik recording, this LP that it's one of my favorite LPs that I have. It's this bootleg record of a live performance from 1984 of them playing in Japan, where, you know, it's this beautiful music that Paik is playing on piano, like kind of his like piano repertoire of like Cezanne and Chopin and stuff. And then it's Joseph Boy's like, you know, gagging on a mic for an hour, basically. So it's like, I love it. It's like everything that I love about, you know, avant-garde music. But it is hard for other people to listen to, you know,
because
it's just, it sounds like someone coughing for such an extended period of time. And it, you're kind of like teased with this beautiful piano stuff. And then it's just interrupted constantly with this, you know.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I'd never actually heard this before until, like, I was unfamiliar with it and I was pretty fascinated by it. I really, you know, I was saying I'm drawn to things that confuse me and that seem, I like when things, like that sort of dichotomy of this really beautiful piano playing and then this, yeah, you said somebody choking for an hour.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was pretty into it. I was listening to it when I was prepping for this. And my kid came in and was just looked at me like, are you okay?
Like, yeah, what? It's often like, it's something I put on at like parties at our house. And, you know, it's, but, you know, I think, I don't know. I don't know how many people actually hate it, but I think if a normal person, a normal person were to listen to it, they'd be like, please, can you turn that off? You know? Right. So, right. Yeah.
No, yeah, 100%. Okay. Well, on a totally different tangent here. What is the most romantic song? Well, first, do you think of yourself as a romantic?
Yeah, I guess so.
All right. Well, what's the most romantic song?
I'm very drawn to the Scottish band, the Blue Nile. Yeah. And I remember a friend played, the first time I heard them, it was the song Let's Go Out Tonight from Hats. And I was just like, holy, this sounds like the best aspects of like late rock music, but like even like sadder and bleaker and more like dreamy. And I was just hooked from that moment. But yeah, there's something about, I mean, I like all of the Blue Nile records. They made 4 albums and I love all of them, but this track, Saturday Night from Hats, is just like, it's just so beautiful. Oh, it's just got everything. So yeah.
Yeah. It's, I feel like the atmosphere of that song is this sort of like pure tenderness or something. It's so, it's, I don't know. There's something, and yeah, there's like, I'm a big Blue Nile fan too.
Yeah.
And yeah, this song, I was really, I don't think anybody's actually picked them before. I can't believe I've done 100 of these and I don't think they've come up. So I was just like, I was excited that it came up, but, I don't know everything about this. Yeah. It feels, it's when I think of like romance or whatever, like some, this feels romantic in some kind of way. Like it's very tender and vulnerable. Like his, I feel like his voice is very, singing is very vulnerable. And it all just feels very close.
Yeah, it also has this like sadness. I guess to me, like romance is always kind of like intertwined with some melancholy for whatever reason, but I associate the two very closely. And this song definitely has the melancholy going for it as well. So
yeah. Great song. Great song. Great band. What is a song that changed your perspective on an artist, either for better or for worse?
I chose What's the Deal by Pink Floyd. I had never liked Pink Floyd. I had heard like, you know, the hits, and then I remember people playing like Piper at the Gates of Dawn and earlier stuff, and I was like, I don't like this, like this isn't for me. and then like, you know, decades pass, and then Sarah played this song for me like while we were driving somewhere. She's like, all right, just like humor me, and she played this song. I was like blown away, like this is such a beautiful track. And I still am not like a huge Pink Floyd fan, although Sarah and I did go see the Live in Pompeii movie in like IMAX like earlier this year. Which I had never seen that like concert movie or whatever, and it was so cool. It was awesome. They play like Echoes.
I've never seen it either.
Yeah, it was really cool. But yeah, this song, I just, something about it. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I've never been a big Pink Floyd fan either, but this, I don't know, when I always think of Pink Floyd, I think of like the sort of like grandeur and the epicness and all the, which is, I don't know, I'm sometimes drawn to that kind of thing, but this feels like very, like the, kind of the, like the, it's like quiet and fragile mm-hmm. or something.
Yeah.
And that, again, it's one of those things, it was unexpected when I don't remember, somebody played this for me. It was this, they were like, oh, if you don't like Pink Floyd, you'll like this.
Yeah, totally. yeah, that's my experience. Yeah, I don't know if it's because it's David Gilmour singing or it's one of his songs, but I still haven't gone down like the rabbit hole with Pink Floyd, but this song I've listened to like hundreds of times. Yeah. So yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so lyrics, are lyrics important to you? Like, can lyrics make or break a song? Do you pay attention to lyrics? Obviously, no, your new project is big on words.
It is, but the irony is that no, lyrics, I guess, don't really matter to me that much. It's more like impressions, like little fragments of sentences that I usually get wrong, but I love loop in my head, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I chose like kind of like an arbitrary Guided by Voices song.
Yeah. I was going to ask like, what is it about Dustin specifically? But is it just Guided by Voices in general?
I mean, I like that. Like as the cattle rack is cleared, it's just like, there's such weird imagery that comes up. Floor was brightly stained. You know, there's just like a lot of weird little hints of things. And, you know, the songs don't really make a lot of sense, you know, to me. Right. And I don't care. Like I, in the same obsessiveness of liking the Grateful Dead, I also love Guided by Voices, like especially earlier Guided by Voices through like the early 90s. I'm like super into all their like the suitcases and the weird kind of horribly recorded stuff. I love that so much. Yeah. Are you into Guided by Voices or?
Yeah. I'm similar. Like, especially the earlier stuff through the like early mid 90s, because I think it was early mid 90s when I first heard them.
Yeah.
So a lot of that stuff especially has stuck with me, and I've always appreciated like half the time I have no idea what anything is about, but there's like this specificity in the language he uses a lot of the time, like that is so, I don't know, that just tickles the right part of my brain. I think it just, yeah. I'll sit there and think about, oh man, this line like over and over, just like I don't even care what they mean. I just like the way he puts words together, I think.
Yeah, it's also impressive to me that he like writes so much and but I even with them, I feel like the words are like secondary. It's just more like, you know, but I do love picking up on like a little fragment of something and just sitting with it. And that's like kind of what I did with The Leopard and with, you know, with all the kind of tech stuff I've done in the past. It's just kind of the impression of it. But yeah.
Yeah. I'm always drawn. I think I'm really drawn to projects like that. Like that Ben Vida record from a couple of years ago, I really, really liked, where it was just phrases that he wrote down.
Yeah. Randomly. Yeah, I like that. I also have like the memory of like a hummingbird, so it's I like thinking in these little segments. Yes. You know, that's how I operate best. So
yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I can relate to that. What song have you or can you listen to the most?
The music that I listen to the most is like old jazz music. Like Lester Young, but I picked Billie Holiday because I do listen to Billie Holiday more than any other music. I love early Billie Holiday stuff, like 30s and 40s Billie Holiday. I also like, you know, the later, more raspy kind of stuff, but yeah. I've always loved jazz music, and once I got familiar with, because I think Lester Young plays on like a whole lot of the Billie Holiday stuff and Teddy Wilson and stuff. So I think once I found Billie Holiday, it had like every element of all my favorite players, and then her singing too. So I just like,
right,
I drink coffee like compulsively, and I have a CD player in my kitchen, and I just have a rotating array of different Billie Holiday CDs that just never leave. So yeah,
sounds pretty great to me.
Yeah
like, and the song you sent is Let's Call a Heart a Heart, which is man, I love that song. I just love the way she phrases her, like, each line, and generally, I mean, there's just, I don't know, god, she's, yeah, I mean, I'm not, Billie Holiday's amazing. Wow, what a,
I know, it's kind of like a cheesy like Starbucks answer, but it's very true for me. Yeah.
Yeah. I whenever, yeah, I've been listening to a lot of Billie Holiday the last like 2 weeks because of so it's like, oh man, I'm, you know, I don't know. I mean, I always got so much music coming through here, and then competing for the stereo with my kid and stuff, but yeah, it's been on a Billie Holiday kick, thanks to you. So I appreciate that. Yeah. what's the last song you completely fell in love with?
I chose The Orchids by Psychic TD. I recently did the sound design for this documentary about Genesis P. Orridge called She Is Still Here, that is like been through the kind of festival circuit and documentary circuit. It's a really cool film. And anyways, I was lucky enough to do the sound design of this film, and this track was in the movie. I actually was not very familiar with Psychic TV at all before working on this documentary. And through hearing it, I was like, oh man, Psychic TV kind of rules. and this song in particular, I really love. There's like this, I don't think it's clarinet, maybe. There's this beautiful clarinet and kind of like marimba-ish kind of thing going on. And anyways, it's just a really cool song. Yeah.
Yeah. I love, this is like one of my favorite songs. I think somebody picked this as like their most romantic song.
Oh, really?
On here. Yeah. But which it does have like this kind of like sweetness and tenderness to it, but it's also, I also feel like there's like, it's a little unsettling, which is part of what I, again, that sort of, I don't know, that's what I love about it. Mm-hmm. And it feels so private to me. Like there's this part of me that's like, should I be hearing this? Like, mm-hmm. What? Oh god, but it's a beautiful song.
Yeah, I like the kind of multi-track vocal stuff too, where the lines mm-hmm. kind of overlap over each other, and it sounds like kind of like a 60s like psychedelic song, you know,
right,
but kind of like home done, you know, home recorded. Mm-hmm. Which I always love that energy. So yeah
that's cool. I haven't seen that documentary. I don't know that it's available to see anywhere outside of but I didn't even notice.
It'll ultimately be available on like streaming something somewhere, but I recommend it. Yeah, David Charles Rodriguez is the director, and it was really fun to work on it. Yeah, it was great.
Nice. Yeah, I'll have to look it up. All right, what is the song that means the most to you? And it's not necessarily the song itself, but you associate it with something, someone, some experience that makes it very meaningful.
The easy answer, or the, you know, this was an easy question to answer. Mother of Pearl by Roxy Music. I love Roxy Music. But this song in particular, I got into it right away. I used to hate the first half of this song because it's kind of like rock and roll, and there's like a huge guitar solo and all this shit, and then it like breaks into this like ballad. And I remember making it, I have like made some tape of it when I was a kid, and I cut out the first part of this song because I hated it so much. Now I like it. But yeah, this is like Sarah and I's song. My wife, oh, nice. And I, it's our song, and like we both just always associated it with each other. So it means a lot to me for that reason. And But yeah, this song goes way back in my life. Like, I've always just been really drawn to this. And so it's nice to have a song that's been there that, you know, you can now associate with someone in your life. So that's, it's really right. special. So
yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. It's, I love that you cut out the first part of it. I mean, yeah, there it is though. It does feel like it's two very different, like, yeah, but I don't know. It all, yeah, the whole thing just always felt like very wild and free to me. And yeah, fuck.
Rock yeah, the lyrics are killer too. It's got that kind of like, again, mm-hmm. the melancholy kind of like, yeah, sadness to it. But yeah, that whole record, Stranded, is like my favorite Roxy Music record. And I'm just a huge Roxy Music fan.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, what is your favorite song, at least right now, in this moment of time?
Maybe now, you know, this was actually also easy to answer. Meat Puppets, Up on the Sun, but the demo version. This is like, it's always been kind of like my number one go-to for like, this is just a killer Gosh. Song. But particularly the demo version that came on this CD reissue that I had when I was a kid. Cause like shortly after getting into Sublime, I got into the Meat Puppets, thank God. and Up on the Sun was like, oh my God, this is amazing. And then I got like the first record with the In a Car 7-inch, which I don't know if you've heard that, but that In a Car 7-inch is like crazy. Oh, yeah, psychotic. Yeah. I love that so much, but the demo version for Up on the Sun, like I guess originally the album was intended to be this kind of like psychedelic, like 4-track home recorded thing. And they recorded all these demos like along those lines. But then for whatever reason, they re-recorded it more like upbeat kind of fast tempo in a studio. But yeah, so this song, I don't know. It's just perfect to me. And I love the home. I think this is like something that you can kind of hear the recording process in the song, which I love. Like, that's what I like about God Above Voices too, that there's just like,
right.
This immediacy to it and like not really caring about, you know, the quality of the recording and all that stuff. Even though I work as a mastering engineer, it's ironic. I love like the worst sounding music.
same.
Yeah. But I think that you can make, you know, you can still master, you know, poorly recorded music and it can still sound fun. So, but yeah, anyways, this is my pick. I love this. It's such a beautiful, the lyrics, the song, the recording, everything about it. It's just perfect.
Yeah. This, I love that it was this specific, like Meat Puppets are one of my like all time favorite bands. My pathway to them was, probably the most familiar one, like via Nirvana.
Oh, right.
Cause I think it was in sixth grade when Nevermind happened, and you know that like perfect timing is super formative, and you know, it feels very cheesy, but it like genuinely kind of changed the trajectory of my life, because that's how I kind of got into punk and got into and well, it's even when I like started learning about feminism and like all that stuff, you know. And yeah. But yeah, I remember when I first, so it's like I, you know, saw Meat Puppets on the Unplug thing or whatever they put, I don't know, yeah, they were on it and they played the songs and I was like, oh, who are this band? I gotta hear everything. And then God, fucking love the Meat Puppets. And this, yeah, this song, it's yeah, it's kind of a perfect song.
It is. It's just amazing. Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned Nirvana. Like, I never actually got into Nirvana, so I didn't have that access point, but I know most people that is their kind of gateway to the Meat Puppets. But
yeah,
I still have never really like listened to Nirvana. I never got like into it, but yeah. But yeah, Meat Puppets, I wish that they got a little bit more like, you know, attention for how crazy they are. Like, their early records, like the first solo record or the first self-titled record, and
yeah,
just there's nothing like that, like thrashiness. It's just so crazy. Yeah,
and they're still making records, aren't they?
I think so. Yeah, I think at least they play like intermittently around, but yeah. Anyways, they're,
fuck yeah.
They're the best.
Yeah. Well, hey, we made it through. Talked about your record. We did it. This is good. This is fun. anything else you want to mention or plug while we're here?
Yeah, well, thanks for having me. It's fun. I mean, it's cool to have like a full circle conversation because, again, like you put out my first tape. And I remember the moment. I at the time, I was with two of my old friends, Stu and Dave. And I remember my first tape came out and we celebrated by going to buy a pack of Magic the Gathering cards and we all played together to celebrate.
That's awesome.
This was in 2007, right? So, but yeah, in terms of plugging, like, yeah, so along with The Leopard, my opera in air quotes, there's also a CD by Kira Mulhern and Sydney Spann with their project Iris Hour, which turned out really nicely. And then there's an LP by Derek Barron, which is really beautiful. So I recommend getting both of those. They're both really cool. And yeah, I mean, luckily there's already been like a fair amount of support, which has been encouraging. So that's like,
that's great.
Felt good. Yeah, makes me want to keep going a little bit longer with the label, you know? So yeah.
Yeah. That is good. I'm a huge fan of the label because I feel like you were putting out stuff, things that nobody else really is. And that just, I don't know. Yeah. So I'm glad that, I hope you keep going. I also understand if at some point it's like, man, this is too much. But
slower is the plan. Because I was like doing like 12 releases a year at a certain point, or like 14 sometimes. And I think just going way slower is how I'm going to try to look at it right now. So,
yeah. Well, cool. All right. Well, and maybe next year some stagings of scenes from The Leopard.
Yeah.
Everybody keep an eye out. Once again, thank you to Sean McCann. Go listen to The Leopard, which is out now on Recital. Check out the link to his playlist in the show notes, link to Leopard in the show notes. And yeah, and just if you're unfamiliar with the Recital catalog, you've got some good times in store because you can just kind of, you know, dartboard style, pick at random and you're going to find something cool. But yeah, that's it. Thanks as always for listening. If you enjoy the show, please leave rating, review, subscribe, all those things where you listen to podcasts because it helps with all the algorithms and all that good stuff. And if you really want to keep it, see the site keep going, we would love you if you kind of join the Patreon, patreon.com/foxydigitalis, or subscribe to the Jewel Garden, jewelgarden.bandcamp.com. All that ongoing support helps so much, really keeps it all going. Thank you to everybody who signed up. And with that, till next time, keep on listening to whatever the hell you want.